Hi, and welcome to Conversations in Clean from Amphora Solutions. I'm Catherine Daly, and with me is my co-host Simon Coles. In this episode, we're talking about coding with Caitlin Walker.
And Caitlin.
Hello.
We'd love to hear more about coding because it's been mentioned on the Systemic Modelling Training Facebook page and it's come up in a few conversations. So tell us a bit about coding.
Well, there's different levels of coding in clean language work. So when you're working one-to-one, for example, using symbolic modelling in a one-to-one context, you listen to what somebody says. You might ask, what would you like to have happen? And then they'll make a statement. Let's say, for example, they said, I'm really stuck. So you code that, so you can use the problem remedy outcome model from Penny and James, and you would code that as a problem. And the code that you've chosen then gives you options for what you might want to do next. So you might want to say, and you're really stuck. So you might want to decide, I'm going to get a metaphor for that. I'm going to embody it. So if you want a metaphor, you'd then say, you know, what, you're stuck like what? What kind of stuck? You just want to get more information. Or you might decide that you're not going to model that at all because it's a problem statement. You might say, and when you're stuck, what would you like to have happen? So the coding is, what sort of a thing is this? And then what will I do as a result of that? So similarly, if somebody says, my neck's really hot, you go, okay, so that's a sensation. And then so you code that as a physical sensation. Then you might go, do I want to go, what's the metaphor for it? You might say, and when your neck's really hot, whereabouts is it really hot? So you might go for location. Or if they tell you location, my neck's really hot just here around the base, you then might say, okay, I've got the location. I'm going to go for the name of it. What kind of hot? So that's coding on it's complex, but it really helps the clean facilitator decide what question to ask next. And I don't think in some ways, I don't think we've made enough of this coding. Because when people say to us, how do you know what the right question is to ask? Actually, we do know the right question. Or at least we know the right set of questions we ask depending on the code we've just made. And in systemic modelling, it's similar. So in systemic modelling, the small models that I've brought into systemic modelling, we've had loads of them. And lots of them were too complex because what I'm looking for when I bring a model in systemic modelling, another way of describing that is it's a set of codes. So bringing in Cartman's drama model, it's just three codes. Is this a problem? That's the first of all, you go, is it a problem or an outcome? If it's a problem, is the problem taking a drama position? And if it's a drama position, is it persecutor, victim or rescuer? So in systemic modelling, what you've got is a series of models that I've brought together. And the ones that I've chosen are the ones that I think are simple enough for a group to learn very quickly in order to code the kind of communication they're having, that they're involved in, such that it helps them make a good, useful decision as to what to do next. For example, I use the triune brain, not because it's anatomically correct, but because it's a really simple set of codes for going, is this person in reptilian brain, fight, flight, or freeze, in which case the best thing I can do right now is settle them? Or are they in mammalian brain, in which case I can ask a few questions to find out where they're coming from, what their values or their rules are, and then go into something else? Or are they neocortical and they're in a great state for coaching, it's a way of coding the state of the person I'm with or myself that then helps me to make a good decision for what I'm going to do next. The drama model, similarly, somebody states a problem, it's a way of coding that problem into persecutor, victim or rescuer. And once you've coded that, then it gives me a choice of what I'm going to do next in the group, depending on what's the state of them, what kind of problem are they coming from, or are they in outcome mode, are they giving me a metaphor? So it's a set of codes that then give me options as a facilitator, or it's a set of codes I can teach a group that gives them options as a team.
As a student of systemic modelling, I'm now thinking about all that you've just said and
So I'm thinking that's another place to place my attention, because already I've got my attention on quite multiple things. I've got several people in the room. I'm tracking information and tracking state. So I'm tracking state and be coding for that. I'm tracking things and information.
Things and information.
You, first off, you said coding's about a thing.
When you've got a group in systemic, so yes, when you've got a group in systemic modelling, you're tracking multiple things. But the codes I've introduced for you to track are the fewest that I think you need to make sense of virtually all communication that a group does.
Okay.
That is try and brain for state, drama model for type of problem, PRO from Penny and James for kind of information, kind of statement. Then obviously you've got the clean questions. But I think you're probably already doing it. If you are doing clean, you are probably already coding. The idea of thinking about it as a set of codes is to liberate you from having to remember all the content.
Mm.
When people say to me, how do you remember all that? I don't remember all of that. Essentially, I remember the coding, the kinds of information that are going on in this group. And then I respond accordingly.
Coding is the meta thing that's going on. And then you've got all the models, which are specific instances of...
of codes, yes.
Of using codes in a particular scenario. But then you decide you're looking at, say, drama or something like that. Well, the drama triangle gives you the labels to use in that coding exercise.
The opposite of coding is... if I use the example I often give when I'm training, of when I say, you'd like this project to be like what? This person to my right says, I'd like it to be unclear. And the person to my left says, that's typical of you. You're always so negative. I can't believe that you're going to ruin this project with your negativity. So the person to my left is not coding accurately. They have miscoded the situation. They have heard a stimulus, an inference, and they've inferred about the inference, and they haven't put any coding between stimulus and response. As I'm listening to them, I'm coding the first person statement of the person to my right is an outcome and it's inference. The person to my left is in inference. Mammalian to reptilian, fight or flight, they're angry, their voice is raised. I know that they're unlikely to be able to process me giving them information right now because they're not in a good brain state. And I notice that the group is transfixed by this. So I code it like that. And I have to then make sure that I don't operate out of my emotions, that I operate from the code. So the code suggests to me, I need to break the interaction, bring the group's attention to me. And then I use it as though this is a brilliant, perfect way that we can now introduce a bit of coding. So I just say to the group, okay, shall I tell you what I'm noticing? Like all eyes on me. So this person said, I'd like it to be unclear. This person said, oh, you're so negative. Now, when this happens in the group, here's something you can do. And I teach them to then go to person to my left. I say, when something's unclear, unclear is like what? She says, it's like you've got your head up against a brick wall. And I say, when you've got your head up against a brick wall, is there anything else? Oh, yeah, well, then none of us can see where we're going. So, okay, I turn back to the group. So when she says unclear, for this one over here, that means X. Now, let's go and find out what it means over here. And so what I'm teaching them to do is to take inference and use clean questions to unpack them. But I'm also meta-teaching them how to code in the moment. And indirectly, I'm teaching the one who's angry to be able to code their experience, but without shaming them or putting them down.
So coding's been part of systemic modelling since the beginning. It's just never been labelled.
Yes, I haven't. It seems obvious to me. But until I started learning coding within my grounded theory of my PhD research, it was like, well, this is what I do at group level.
Because I've heard you that explanation before, but not under the
guise of coding.
Yeah, yeah. So it has a name now.
Yes, so I'll have been able to tell you lots of times before, I'll be able to say kind of why I'm doing that, but not how did I know that that's what to do. Mm. So the coding is, how do you know what your options are now? Because otherwise, you might turn around and give that person clean feedback.
Yeah.
Well, that would be a stupid thing to do.
It's not logical given the information.
But only if you've coded it. Mm. If you haven't coded it, then logically, when somebody's in inference, you can use clean feedback to help them, but not if they're in the wrong brain state. Yeah, so it's the coding is what gives you, it limits the moves that you can make in the game next.
And when there's levels and state, are there some things that, in my language, trump another?
Yes, the state trumps everything.
Okay.
So if they're not in a state to receive this, there is nothing, no good will come of giving her feedback right now. The only thing that you can do right now is accept and extend, because that will help to settle her system. So you've always got to go to her first, not the other one. And you can't do anything to violate it. You've got to go and accept it. And then she'll give you more information and then you welcome it. There's something in that attention will settle her system. So now she won't be in fight or flight. She'll probably still be in mammalian. She'll still want to fight, but she's not in fight or flight.
And is there a time when you might not, when someone's in a, say, red brain state, reptilian state, where you wouldn't even accept and extend?
Yes.
And what would you do then?
I'd take my attention off them. Or, and to a certain extent, what I did then was the first thing I did was I didn't put any attention on her. I went, okay, I stood up, got everyone's attention to me. So what I'm doing is I'm just giving her space to settle down. But I've done that before where then people have started on me. So once they were starting on somebody else, but then I've interrupted it and they've started on me. So yeah, so talk about brain state. So a lot of that stuff that I do of, can I just stop you there? Can I just freeze? Do you know what can I tell you what I'm noticing? Is a break state because somebody's getting riled up. And so it's all eyes on me. We're going to go and do something else for a minute. And it's to allow them time to settle. If they were to start on me, then that's when it's really good that if you've got somebody else to say, a co-facilitator to say, okay, so I'll tell you what I'm noticing is everyone's status changing. And then just to get everyone to code, whereabouts are you at the moment in the brain state? What we're going to do is we're going to take a 5-minute break. What's the thing that would most help you to be in a good learning state right now? And they might just stop the whole whatever, send them all for a walk, and then let's come back.
Okay. That's really useful information, hearing all of that, is that state trumps everything. And I hadn't twigged that when you do that, it's because that had happened first, that you'd notice someone's state was changing.
Yes, you've got to interrupt it. There's no good will come of trying to coach into a non-coachable system.
So can I tell you what I'm noticing? What you've been saying is not new in terms of a systemic modeling engagement. But now we've been able to use the term coding and talk about that higher level, Catherine's now able to, it's going in quicker. And that's the interesting thing to me about labeling this thing coding. It's like, all right, now all of a sudden some complexity falls away and we can.
Yes, and when we did this in Boston, then we were able to very quickly do some provocations where two of us would, I'd say to Catherine, oh, Catherine, do you want to go out tonight? And she'd say, oh, great. Yeah, like I can fit that in. And then we'd freeze and then the group would decode what's just happened and then go, under what circumstances would we do what if we just heard that? And the group would very quickly and very animatedly able to realise of course they could code. They just hadn't been doing it that. The coding seems to make it easier, not harder.
So it's almost if you did coding as a separate exercise and then went into let's talk about systemic modeling and the different models, it might be a quicker.
Yes, I don't know yet what you have to know before coding makes sense to you. And I think that's partly why having this discussion with you two, then we can see when people listen to it, are there people who've not done systemic modeling training who can listen to what we've just described and say, oh yeah, I can do that.
So why is it called coding?
There are other words like categorizing or labeling, but they all have connotations. Like if I label that, it's like I'm the expert of it, but it's not, these are just my codes for that behavior. They're not true. They're just a code. And I think when I was studying grounded theory, coding and grounded theory, none of these codes are true. They're just the code that the researcher has placed on that.
So it's called coding in grounded theory, is it?
Yeah, it's coding in grounded theory. This is a different kind of coding. It's just that inspired me to think about this from a coding point of view. So that these are the codes that systemic modelers label that kind of behavior or that kind of statement in the same way that symbolic modelers label the parts of speech or gesture, and then that gives them a set of actions to do afterwards.
And the levels and state trumps kind of is the trump. That's when you would pause the group and be meta. And is there any other sort of hierarchy kind of thing that can happen next, or is it fairly flat after state?
State trumps everything, but then contract is next. Is it your jurisdiction? So when I tell a story of listening to the two young men on the train whose girlfriend is in drama with one of them, I didn't have a jurisdiction to bring the drama triangle to their attention. So I had to have a relationship with them and kind of say, do you know what? When he's saying, oh my goodness, she's a psychopath. And I go, I can probably shed some light on what's happening. Are you interested? Is an invitation to a contract to decode the situation. So I have no jurisdiction over that relationship, and therefore I have no way of intervening. Similarly, even if that were my friend and they were in drama with me, if they haven't signed up to learning about how to code and decode relationships, they will not appreciate me saying, do you know, you're completely in drama with me. They won't appreciate that. So to decoding or teaching them to decode when they haven't signed up to it is rude. If they are labeling me, if they're saying you're being aggressive, I can say, that's not my intention. What is it that I'm doing that you call aggressive? That's reasonable because I can push back on a code somebody's applying to me that I won't accept. But if they're doing it to their friend, it's not my jurisdiction. So I think contract trumps a lot, which is why when you do a systemic modeling intervention, it's really important to know what you're there for and to have an agreement. That's all of the clean setup that we do beforehand, is to get an agreement for what is it I can hold them to account against. And that allows me to call out behaviours that I'm noticing.
And when you haven't, because I'm thinking about some of my experiences of doing systemic modelling in things, and we haven't had that relationship. And so maybe I've fallen foul of that because we haven't done the contracting and then gone, oh, I'm going to draw attention to it. And it's like, phew.
It can escalate things because they don't know. It can feel like a judgment to them, like you've just jumped in to decode their behavior when you don't have the jurisdiction. A lot of that stuff that I do at the beginning is about legitimizing what I'm likely to do. A lot of the stories I tell are, even what would you like to know before we begin? I might gather that and then I might decode it for the group. I might say, look, you know, we can put these together. These things over here are all about people taking care of their safety. And that is the triune brain reptilian. These things here are all about people's values. And that is them taking care of the mammalian brain. And this stuff here is all about their outcomes. And that is the neocortic part of the brain. The minute I can, I provoke the group and then I get the models to help them code what's happening in the group. Rather than, and that's why I always say when I'm teaching, don't teach the models to a group. That costs them time. Do stuff to the group, and as quick as possible, use the models to decode what's just happened. But I've never said decode. I'm just saying I'm using it now, but it might seem easier to you to understand if I'm saying what you're doing is you're using the models to help them decode what's just happened to them.
So coding sounds like it's one of the fundamental building blocks of systemic modelling.
Yes, I'm feeling a little bit embarrassed that maybe I didn't tell you about it earlier.
Well, I think you did.
The 20-year journey that we've had.
but I think you did. You never labelled it.
Yes, I didn't code it.
Ironically,
coded the code now.
So what happened just before you realised you should tell us about this?
I think the first thing was at the Northern Taste of Clean when we did coding in the moment. We did a little kind of professional symposium, clean interviewing upstairs, particularly coding in the moment. I gave everyone a bit of transcript and got them to look at it. And it was realizing that even people who had a lot of training in clean were getting hooked by assumptions and they weren't coding. And I was like, my goodness, how can you even read an interview if you keep wandering off in your head and making up stuff that's not directly attributable to the data in front of you? That must be exhausting. Your head's too busy. So whereas when I'm interviewing or I read an interview, we code based on the data. we don't add in extra content by actually thinking about it. We just pay enough attention to code it. And I was thinking, this must be more interesting than I thought it was, because otherwise, why can't everyone do it? That there's something missing for people. So that's when I started getting into the coding in clean language interviewing. And then Carrie asked a question at Systemic Modeling Things that provoked me to say it out loud, that we're just doing it. That's what we're doing now. And then now that I'm starting to articulate it, I'm starting to think of ways to teach that, that in Boston seemed to be very useful. And everyone's going, well, why didn't you tell us that before? I'm, well,
yeah. I guess it's one of those classic things of you don't really know the difference of what's going on in your head versus what goes on someone else's head.
I didn't know how anyone could do what they were doing if they weren't doing that. So it never occurred to me I had to tell anyone.
This is why we find it so hard.
Yes. It was the same as when somebody, before I first articulated that systemic modelling was fundamentally different from symbolic modelling. It wasn't until we all got together and the symbolic modellers were doing stuff where I was thinking, but that's not going to work. And they're like, well, but this is, we're just doing this. I said, but you don't do that in the group. And they said, well, what do you do in the group? I said, well, you have to do it like this. They're like, why? I said, well, because you have to accept and extend everything that is. You can't use PRO in a group. They're like, well, why not? I don't know, but you can't. And then it's that you can't introduce a model in systemic modelling until it's deemed useful by the group. You can't force the group. You can't tell a group off, for example, for not being able to separate evidence from inference. You have to support them to find a use in separating evidence from inference. You can't tell them, you can't correct them or redirect them from a problem to an outcome. But you can, if it is obviously useful to the group, you can then teach them the code and to be able to code the difference between a problem and an outcome. But it has to be in their interests because they didn't sign up to you for change. It's not the same rules as when somebody's come to you for coaching or for therapy.
And Carrie, and then Boston, mm-hmm. and now this.
Yes.
What might happen next?
What might happen next? Well, I think, if I had time to do it, which I'm not sure that I do right now, so somebody else, some of the students might start doing this themselves, there are probably a limited set of options for each code. So and similarly to when Penny and James modelled out PRO, they're like, okay, if it's a problem, you can ask, what would you like to happen? If it's a remedy, you can ask, what would you like instead? Or what would you like next? And if it's an outcome, you can model it. So that's their... It's a nice limited model for students to get the head round. There might be something similar with this. Like I didn't know, I mean, I do know, but I haven't said out loud that state trumps everything. But I do know it's true. Mm-hmm. State trumps everything, then it's contract, then it's kind of knowledge in the group. So for example, there's no point separating evidence from inference for a group based on an interaction that's just happening in this moment. Unless you've, if they're starting to get, well, I suppose that's state again, if they start to get riled up, yeah, there's just different orders that you have to do things that are most likely to let the learning go in. And so, yeah, so the what next is there's probably a limited number. I just don't know what it is right now. Just one last thing. There may be codes that I've never articulated now that we look at it like this that aren't in the models. So, for example, imposition and invitation are things I code really strongly in the group. And I didn't realize that until we started playing this, the coding game. So for example, if you say, well, Catherine's really bombastic, I label that inference imposed. Mm-hmm. If you say, I experience Catherine as bombastic, that's inference owned. So that imposition and owned are completely, I code them completely differently. And so one, I have to scrape it off where it's been projected to and put it back where it belongs. Whereas the other is already where it belongs. We can just investigate it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that I think there are going to be some codes that come out that we didn't know about.
Well, that was enlightening.
Thank you so much. Watch this space.
Watch this space.
Or listen to this space.
Depends on what your modality is.
Yes.
They might be making pictures all over the place.
Thank you very much.
Till next time.
I think they're both with chickens somewhere. There are literally chickens
in the kitchen.
In the kitchen being chased out by the dog.
And Sean. And we had a 20-minute warning whilst we're having a pause till supper, dinner.
But I don't know why there shouldn't be any chickens in the back garden. They're all dead.
I think they may have come through the garage. A mystery.
We're going to have to go and herd those chickens back.